Conversations That Matter is a partner program for the Center for Dialogue at Simon Fraser University. The production of this program is made possible thanks to the support of the following and viewers like you.
Professor Ono, welcome. Thanks for joining me. I looked at your resume, which is remarkable. And that's an understatement. And I know that you had a revered position at the University of Cincinnati. Why would you give up that path that you were on to come to UBC? What is it about UBC that made you say, I'm willing to come here?
Well, it was a very difficult decision to leave the University of Cincinnati as well as the city of Cincinnati. We were incredibly well-received and integrated in the school and the community. I could have stayed there forever, and it was difficult. The reason why I decided to come to UBC to answer a question is that it's a very special place to my family and to me personally. I was born at UBC in 1962 at St. Paul's Hospital. My father was an assistant professor of mathematics at UBC at the time. Norman McKenzie was stepping down as president during that era. And what's happened at UBC since that time, in just half a century, half of UBC's life, is really an international success story. In many ways, it's a miracle that the institution, which was then an offshoot of McGill, and was then a very good regional university, has become one of the world's top 25 to 35 universities. And it's a miracle. And it's now expanded to go beyond Point Grey to include a significant campus in the Okanagan, which in just 10 years has become quite a force. There are almost $300 million of research going on around the VGH campus, with some world-changing research in health going on there. So the reason why I moved to UBC was to be part of one of the biggest success stories in academia around the world.
Okay, so that lays the groundwork. Where do you envision the university going under your leadership?
I see no reason why UBC can't move from being one of the top 25 to 35 universities in the world to being within the top 20 universities in the world.
Okay, but that's a big leap. How do you go about making that happen?
Well, the leap is not that big if you think about what UBC has accomplished in its first century. But really going from probably being in the top 200 or so universities to being in the top 25 to 35 universities, that's been done largely in the past 20 to 25 years. And so moving from 25 or 35 to 20 isn't that big a jump. Now, of course,
but you know as well as I do that as you start to move up,
it gets harder. Absolutely.
Each step gets much harder, and so it becomes a complex set of coordinated initiatives that you have to put in place to make that happen. And so, how do you see yourself doing that?
Well, I don't see myself doing it personally. The success of an institution really requires collective action between many different individuals. I think it's important for the president to articulate that vision, to work with various stakeholders to sharpen that vision, and that's what we're doing right now in creating our new strategic plan. But the success of it really requires alumni support, support from within the institution, support from the province, and support from philanthropy and support from Canada. And so one of my roles is to be a connector and key spokesperson about that vision and to get everyone excited about it and rowing in the same direction. And that's really the key role of a president. And I believe that with British Columbia being the strongest economy in Canada, with UBC and Vancouver being really a very attractive destination for the best and brightest, that the sky is the limit for what we can do.
I just got to get you to hang on for a second while we take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back.
Conversations That Matter is a not-for-profit program made possible thanks to the charitable support of the following and from viewers like you. Please visit conversationsthatmatter.tv and help us to continue to produce this program.
How important is the research component here at UBC in you being able to realize that vision?
Well, the greatest universities in the world are all centers for research and development, and UBC is one of those. To really move up the league tables or rankings, if you will, it's essential that we remain a research institution, that we are known as a place that not only teaches knowledge, but creates new knowledge. And we need to move from being the number one innovative university in Canada, in the top 50 in the world, to being hopefully within the top 25 or 30 most innovative universities in the world. Reuters actually comes up with that ranking. And so I see no reason why we can't do that.
But money plays a big part in that, doesn't
absolutely,
it?
Absolutely, absolutely.
And so does that mean that you're going to be looking at being able to create a business, a model that will help to support future growth so that the university in many ways becomes an incubator?
Well, let me first say that the responsibility of UBC and institutions to create new knowledge, that there's a continuum of knowledge, not only that which is immediately possible to apply or to transfer that knowledge for commercial ends, that you don't know where the next transformative idea is going to come from. So I think at the core, a commitment for UBC must be to create new knowledge for the sake of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you think about all of the things that have been made possible from research, whether it's cell phone or the internet or informatics and analytics, a lot of that comes from very fundamental research, mathematics and basic chemistry and physics and basic biological research. And so pure research is really the seed corn to future innovation. And so I want to say that first because it's really, really important. I think it's really dangerous if we only think about universities as direct feeders to a pipeline of intellectual property, that really growing the foundation of basic knowledge is a key responsibility of a university. Mm-hmm. That being said, I think that universities are, as places of research and development, incredibly important in terms of creating, acting as a spark plug for the economy. And it's not something that we should apologize for. I think we should be proud that much of the progress in eradicating AIDS from the world is coming from UBC faculty members. I think we should be proud that new and innovative approaches to dealing with drug addiction is coming out of our laboratories and in our teaching hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of that needs to happen. I think we should be proud of the fact that when you pick up your iPhone and take a panorama shot, that stitching of images comes out of our computer science department. So people don't realize the impact of UBC research, and it's astonishing in its breadth and depth. You're right that you need capital to grow the reputation and impact of the university in research. And I'm really confident that we'll be able to do that. We've been having conversations with the provincial government, the federal government, and I think that the stars are aligning right now, that at both the provincial level and the federal level, there's a realization that the future competitiveness of BC and Canada will depend upon the strength of our research universities. And as one of the two great research universities in Canada, two largest, UBC has to be successful for BC and for Canada to be successful.
There's two components to that. You talk about like the generation of new knowledge, which then fits into the overall curriculum of providing the people who come to learn here with insights that will prepare them for the world as they move forward.
Absolutely.
What else do you need to do to ensure that the student population, as they go through their educational process here, is going to be equipped to meet the needs of an ever-changing workplace?
I think that universities cannot be ivory towers. I think that there have to be lots of deep links into community, whether that has to do with trying to solve grand challenges in society or whether it has to do with driving innovation in companies here in BC and elsewhere, I think there's a responsibility, especially for a public university like UBC, to have those connections. And I have a role in forging those connections between UBC and the outside world. In terms of students, I think the best way to prepare them to be citizens is to create those connections and to evolve them in collaborations between university faculty and external stakeholders. So the more students are actually involved in experiential or work-integrated learning in a local company, whether it's a high-tech company, whether it's a media outlet, whether it's a newspaper, whether it's the symphony orchestra, the more connections that we have, the better we align what they learn with what they're going to be doing once they graduate. And so UBC is, I think, one of the better universities in thinking about that. There's an Arts One program, there's an Arts Co-op. And so it's not just applied science students that are actually doing internships and co-ops. We're trying to expand that so that more students have those sorts of opportunities. So one of the legacies that I hope to leave during my tenure at UBC is to truly have built more connections and to have a meaningful experience for students outside of the classroom, outside of the campus.
This is our second commercial break. We'll be back in a moment.
Conversations That Matter is a not-for-profit program made possible thanks to the charitable support of the following and from viewers like you. Please visit conversationsthatmatter.tv and help us to continue to produce this program.
So when you talk about build those connections, are you talking within the community of educational institutions in British Columbia, Pacific Northwest, or globally?
The world. You know, our students should be going, while they're students, to different countries. They should be working in research institutes, in laboratories, in theaters, in television stations around the world. And the more we expand those opportunities for the students, the more enriching their experience will be as a UBC student.
You know, we see quite a number of international students coming to BC and to UBC, but we don't see such a movement of Canadian-born students getting components or parts of their education in other institutions in different jurisdictions around the world. What can you do to help to facilitate that? Because as you pointed out, it brings tremendous benefit to the individual and to us collectively.
You'd actually be surprised how many UBC students actually do spend time at foreign academic institutions. I travel around the world, and we have UBC students all over the world. And we want to increase those numbers.
How can you do that? How can you help to promote that within the student body? Because there is a financial component to that as well.
Oh, sure. So one of the things is to get the word out that it's a transformative experience for them and to encourage them to consider spending some time at a foreign institution or doing an internship or co-op. And part of it has to do with what you said, eliminating the financial barrier. One of the things that I did in Cincinnati was to create a pot of money from philanthropy and from foundations that we could give out as bursaries or scholarships to students so that we would eliminate the barrier of cost to doing that. I think most students would love to do that if it didn't cost more. And so some of that comes from reciprocal exchanges with foreign institutions where the student pays the UBC tuition and can go to Oxford or can go to Cambridge. And I hope to work with Stephen Toop as the new president of Cambridge to open up those sorts of opportunities. So the only additional cost would be the cost of travel. And if we can raise some sort of endowment so that students can be provided the cost of travel, but they're still paying a UBC tuition, if we can eliminate any barriers of the travel cost or room and board, that we eliminate that barrier. And I think that if you do that, most students, most young people would love to spend some of their time in a foreign country. So part of it has to do with getting the word out, establishing those reciprocal agreements, and creating a pot of money so that we eliminate that barrier.
Well, do you also have to work with those other institutions so that you can ensure that the credits that the student gains while in attendance there are contributing back towards their overall educational objectives?
Absolutely, and we have an entire office that does that, and we have hundreds of actual relationships with universities around the world, and some of them have been around for decades. So certainly that is our responsibility. They're not going to Paris to look at the Eiffel Tower. They're there to really learn something and also to get that experience of being a global citizen.
International students, we know, play a role in filling out the population here. But what are your plans as far as taking the UBC experience and putting it into other jurisdictions outside of British Columbia? Because you talked about the campus in the Okanagan.
Sure.
Harvard, Princeton, MIT, a variety of other of the top schools in the United States have set up satellite campuses in different jurisdictions. Can you foresee a role like that for UBC? Or are we moving, like literally leapfrogging over that into more of the edX or MOOC kind of delivery of education?
Well, UBC, along with Harvard and MIT, is one of the initial institutions that participate in edX, as you know.
Yeah.
We have a very active presence in terms of MOOCs and distance learning. So that's something that will almost certainly continue and probably expand. It's helpful for our own students, and it's also helpful to share with the world the amazing things that are happening on this campus. So I expect that to continue. A lot of those great universities do not have very ambitious expansion plans. Some of the ones that are most ambitious are, for example, New York University, mm-hmm. Northeastern University in Boston. But the Harvards and the Princetons and the Yales and the Johns Hopkins, they all have some sort of a footprint. For example, Johns Hopkins has a footprint in Washington, D.C. and also in Nanjing. They've had that for a long time. It's very strategic. And so I'm not a proponent for international expansion for just the sake of expansion. It's got to be very carefully thought through. It has to be something that the faculty and the leadership of the faculties mm-hmm. here want to do. You get into trouble if you're a president and you try to, in a top-down way, impose your vision on what the university should do. You know, the resources that we have are precious. In whatever we do in terms of those sorts of interactions have to come from within the faculty and have to make sense and really have a positive impact on students. And so the partners and the possible locations where we might expand, I'm not ruling that out, have to be vetted very carefully.
I'm enthralled by your vision for UBC. Unfortunately, I've got to get you to hang on for one last second while we take our final break. We'll be right back.
Conversations That Matter is a not-for-profit program made possible thanks to the charitable support of the following and from viewers like you. Please visit conversationsthatmatter.tv and help us to continue to produce this program.
We're seeing a shift politically in the United States and its attitude towards China. Does this not create other opportunities for us, and especially in education, because we have a very good product that people want?
Well, I'll tell you that there's not a shortage of foreign institutions that want to partner with UBC. There's a long line. And we're very selective about who we partner with. One university in China, because you bring up China, that we partner with is Tsinghua University, arguably one of the top two research universities in China. And we also have significant interactions with Beijing University and the Chinese Academy of Sciences. So that's the way we want to build relationships with our peers, with institutions where there's alignment in our scholarship and our research. And there are opportunities that exist now and will come online in the near future for some sort of a physical presence, but we need to evaluate that very, very carefully. It's possible that it might make sense, and certainly the geopolitical changes that are occurring are things that we're mindful of. We've experienced a spike in interest in UBC among prospective students, not only in Asia, but also from the United States and from Great Britain. The impact of Brexit and of the election in the United States is already being felt. So it's not just students. We have preeminent scientists and humanists and scholars that are calling us, asking whether that we would consider being their new home because of what's happening. And it's also true in Great Britain as well. So we would be foolish not to consider that and consider strengthening our faculty by accepting the right people that and those opportunities. And those sorts of things are being evaluated right now.
Clearly, you're very optimistic about the future of UBC, but everything is always a combination of so many different parts. Are there a few challenges that you think that we need to address that allow us to be on this right path that you can envision?
I mean, we do have enviable resources. For a public institution, we have a significant endowment. We have lots of friends that have supported us considerably. And there are only a handful of public universities that have access to that kind of resource and goodwill and support. But there are challenges, certainly. To be globally competitive requires considerable resource. If you look at some institutions such as Johns Hopkins, they've gotten $1 billion from a single donor, Bloomberg. There are other universities like the University of Oregon that have gotten $400 or $500 million from a single donor. So to keep pace and to move up those rankings, we need to be equally competitive in identifying resources. So that's one challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Another challenge has to do with the cost of living in Vancouver. We're not the only distinguished and strong university that's based in an expensive area. Columbia University is one in Manhattan. Stanford University and UCSF and Berkeley are all in the San Francisco Bay Area. University College London, Imperial College, King's College, they're all in London, England, and they're just as expensive, if not more expensive, than Vancouver. But to compete for talent and for students, we need to have answers to how they can afford to live here. And we're actively working on that.
That is a big challenge, and it's one that faces not just UBC, but so many other organizations here in British Columbia.
Absolutely. And we do have one card that most institutions do not have, and that is that we have lots of land.
Mm-hmm.
And as you've probably noticed, we're building our own city.
Yes.
And we're dramatically expanding the number of rooms for students, where we will soon be, if we're not already, the largest residential campus in Canada. We will soon have 16,000 rooms for students. And so the change of UBC from being a commuter campus to being one where it's significantly residential has been remarkable.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to come and do this, and I wish you all the success
thank
as
you
venture
very much.
Forward.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.